So, one of the ways that this Dharma teachings that we have received from India and Thailand and Burma through English translations, one of the ways that it can become richer is to understand that these words that we translate, the original words in India, have very rich connotations, very rich associations that often gets lost in English translation. And it's a little bit, I don't know if it's the right language, but a little bit a consequence of the early translators of the early Buddhist texts, studying the language, early Pali language, were very much relying on technical commentarial definitions of words to understand what the word meant. And so between having to choose one English word that doesn't share all the association and choosing more technical meaning of the word, we end up a little bit of a, some of the English translations of these terms leave us a little bit impoverished compared to the original. And one of these words that does this is the word samadhi. It's usually translated into English as concentration. And there are some valuable associated meanings of concentration that we can probably play with in practice, like concentrated orange juice. You know, that just the essence is there, you know, all the sweetness is really concentrated without any extra water. So we're concentrating ourselves to get the essence. You know, it's little silly things like that you can do. But or I love the idea that the etymology of concentration is, you know, with a center. And so, you know, to have this concentric circles of our life and be centered in the middle of us, concentric circles of includes all of our life, kind of. So all kinds of things you can do with the English word concentration. But the word samadhi in India is a rich, valuable religious word. And in some Indian religious traditions, samadhi is the equivalent of what Buddhists would call awakening or realization. And so when you hear the word samadhi in some place in India, it's like, wow, now we're talking about something really wonderful. And so there's a to kind of maybe to not to make a literal translation, but a different word for to translate samadhi into English than concentration, that might touch into some of this richness that samadhi has in India, that may be a little bit comparable in kind of Western psychology and maybe especially more recent Western psychology. And that is that if samadhi is translated as whole, that in becoming concentrated, we're becoming whole. And there's a lot of positive associations with becoming whole, all of yourself. Like you're not fragmented, you're not divided against yourself, you're not leaving parts of yourself out. A feeling of wholeness is for some people, I think, is almost synonymous with a feeling of health. And so becoming wholly ourselves. And so samadhi is a kind of way of becoming wholly ourselves, which has the wonderful homonym of HOLY, and sacredly ourselves. And I think that in India, the word samadhi really belongs to kind of a sacred realm of life and way of being, and that if you if your meditation teacher just simply barks at you, concentrate. you don't get the feeling of this. We're stepping into a sacred realm, and so I sometimes think of samadhi as not as an act of concentration, like a laser focus of the mind that's pinpoints something and zeroes in. But rather, it's like entering into a sacred temple, and it's a state of being that gets developed, partly from a focused attention, but it's the state that we're talking about. And so, when we talk about samadhi, factor of awakening, here in particular, we're talking about a state of being, and not a particular act of concentrating. Well, acts of concentrating are valuable. It's only part of what's being emphasized when we talk about samadhi and cultivating samadhi. And so the sacredness of entering into a state that's very rich, kind of this whole holistic state, that everything is included, but in a way that it feels... certainly special. It feels, ideally it evokes a kind of reverence or a kind of awe or a kind of respect or care or a kind of love or a kind of intimacy. And a word that I, an expression that I like a lot for samadhi is the idea of coming home. Being really at home. And at home, in my, I don't know how it is, people have different associations with the word home, but for me it's the place where I can just be myself, and just as I am, warts and all. I can walk around in my pajamas and no one cares, and because no one there to care. And so I can just kind of be how I am, and just in all the ways, and I don't have to be self-conscious around it, and just kind of relax. And so the state of being at home in samadhi, just relaxing and being whole, being yourself completely. And so to approach samadhi the way that you would approach a sacred ground someplace, sacred temple or ground, that you would actually approach it with respect. You'd approach it with a certain humility. You certainly wouldn't approach it with conceit and arrogance, like I'm going to get concentrated, and this is the retreat where I'm going to bust through, and I'm going to be really concentrated and really get the wonderful benefits of samadhi, and I'll be the most samadhied person on the retreat. Boy, I can't wait to get into this. I know I can do it. It's more like, yes, I'm here at the gates of the temple ground, and maybe the gates will open, and Dharma willing. And certainly when the times when I develop samadhi, enter into samadhi, one of the strong feelings I have is that it's a gift. I don't actually think of myself as having a native good capacity for concentration, and I don't feel so responsible for getting concentrated. I have to do my part. I have to contribute what I have to contribute. So certainly I have a role. I don't just sit and twiddle my thumbs waiting for concentration to come. But I do my part. But even though I do my part, I don't feel like what I do is the cause of getting concentrated. This, when the concentration comes in, it feels like, oh, the gift just happened. I've been gifted, and now I'm in this different state of being that feels whole, feels settled, feels peaceful, feels focused, feels at home, feels complete here. So I don't know what associations you have with samadhi, concentration, and with a state of being. And I don't want my words, my associations, to carry the day as being what has to be for you. I think this is we're talking about something relatively personal here. And some of the teachings on samadhi, are that the Buddhist texts, are pointing to some of the features in samadhi, some of the signposts that can exist, but they're not really telling you how you should feel it. And maybe it's all, everyone's going to have a little different way if it's felt, the state itself, the, with those signposts there. Oh, I think I'm in this territory now. And certainly feels whole and complete. And for me, the idea of being whole is not one of being a perfect human being, but rather one, a wholeness that includes my foibles, includes my warts and all, you know, shortcomings, and everything's included. But there's something about it, it's all included. It's all there, part of it. Where, so that not any one individual part of ourselves is over-prioritized, over-emphasized. And I know that sometimes it's possible to over-emphasize our fear, over-emphasize our neurosis, over-emphasize our desires and conceits and judgments about ourselves or others. And so it's kind of like we end up focusing and fixating on particular parts of who we are, subparts of who we are, to the detriment of the whole. And sometimes we give so much importance to it that we think we can only be happy if I fix this subpart of me. If only this kind of goes away or gets somehow healed, only then can I be happy. And one of the lessons of samadhi is a lesson that you actually don't have to solve all, you know, all your psychological issues and all your things. It's possible to expand the awareness to include everything, the whole, including the foibles, and they put in context in such a way that we're not necessarily troubled by them. Hopefully we're wise about them, but you know, it's more okay to have them. Look at that. I get anxious sometimes. Well, I think I'm not the only one. And it's there on the side. And, you know, sometimes, who knows, maybe it's good to be a little bit anxious. Who knows? So I'm just going to leave the anxiety alone. And it can be there over my left shoulder. And if I need it, or if it really needs me, it'll let me know. But I don't have to be so concerned about it and worried about it, or feel something's wrong with me because I have some anxiety. It's just anxiety, or you know. And so, in the whole, in the context of the whole, there's a whole different perspective of ourselves that comes. More classically, the idea of samadhi in Buddhist meditation practice involves a gathering together, a unification. And the Sanskrit etymology for the word samadhi literally means something like to gather together. That's the most common etymological explanation. And so this idea of unification, and for many people that's an unusual thing to experience, being whole, being unified, because of the way in which we are attached to particular subparts of who we are, and particular thoughts or memories or stories or opinions or identifications we might have, or desires or aversions, resentments, regrets, that, you know, somehow these, for whatever reason, partly it's cultural, partly it's familial, partly it's personal, that we tend to prioritize certain subparts of ourselves. And different cultures will prioritize different parts of it. So there are subcultures in the United States, for example, that will prioritize different features of this heart and mind that we have. And then samadhi is that which holds it all, opens up, so we're not overemphasizing one part of it. And so, for example, thinking. I mean, how many of you, I bet a few of you, I don't know how many, a handful of you, spend an inordinate amount of time in your thinking. Maybe occasionally. You know, I don't want to assume anything. But I suspect a few of you occasionally have spent an ordinary amount of time thinking during this retreat. And partly that represents something in your system, psychophysical system, puts some kind of value and importance on the world of thinking, on the world of thinking. And I don't want to disrespect thinking. I have a very friendly relationship with my thinking. I kind of like my thoughts. We get along pretty well. So I'm not disrespecting it. But to overemphasize it and make it like the be-all and end-all, everything's going to be solved through thinking, everything's going to be figured out, everything's going to be something. And we actually shortchange ourselves. And so samadhi is what helps us to break the hegemony of our attachments, or the ways in which we fixate on certain parts of the whole at the detriment of really opening up to the whole. And so mindfulness practice is a practice of really seeing what's here, but as we settle in to see what's here, we tend to bump up against the places where we're attached, the places where we're fragmented, the places where we're resisting something, the places where we're cut off from parts of ourselves. And so, because we can feel it, we can see it, we can sense it, and so as we settle, we start seeing this, and then that is the beginning of becoming a whole, unification. Like, this too I'll include, this too. So for me, the phrase, the little motto that goes along with samadhi practice is this too. This too I'll include, this too is part of it all. So a state of mind and a state of being that samadhi is, and as we get more unified or whole, inclusive, not holding anything at bay, resisting or holding tight to something, then as the awareness develops, then it develops in a softer way. It develops, it's not so fragile or so forceful or tight or contracted. And so, as is often said, that it's not a coincidence that samadhi is the sixth factor of the seven factors. Sixth factor of the seven factors of awakening. It kind of builds on the other ones. And not a few people, including myself, have overlooked that and tried to get concentrated from the get-go. Okay, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to get concentrated. And I've huffed and puffed, and I couldn't blow the building down. I couldn't, nothing would happen. And so this idea of preparing yourself to enter the sacred ground, preparing yourself for samadhi, making yourself a receptacle for the gift. And this is partly why, the first five parts of are so important in this practice, certainly cultivating mindfulness, this investigation, endeavor, effort, joy, and tranquility. And especially the tranquility part. For many people here in the modern West, I think the best way to translate this word, just because of how people live their lives, is just relax. Relax. Then later we can get into tranquility and how sublime and wonderful tranquility is. But, the first thing is just relax. And and without some relaxation, you can't really develop samadhi. Without some joy, some well-being, this holistic samadhi, it doesn't really have a chance to develop. And so there is a homecoming, a willingness to settle here, a willingness to open to here, to all of it, not fighting, not pushing, not striving, but kind of here I am and settling here. And this is where the idea of, the concentration, really being centered here. Can I be centered in this place, at this time, in this body? Really centered here. And not to push anything away, but really to rest in the center. And so the analogy that I like, I've often taught, is the idea of a marble and a bowl, big bowl. If you let go of the marble on the edge, top edge, it'll roll back and forth and around for a while until the momentum slows down. And eventually it comes to rest at the very bottom. And so samadhi is that process by which we let the loose marbles settle and come to rest in some deep, meaningful way. And so there's an allowing that's an important part of samadhi. One of the times I went to Thailand to practice meditation, it was the first time I went there from the airport that I went directly to a monastery in Bangkok to spend a few days, a week or something. And the first afternoon I was there, I got my first teaching from some monk. And that memorable, he said, samadhi is mostly a matter of letting go. And I was a little surprised. I thought it was about huffing and puffing. I thought it was about, getting really focused and zero in. And that was mostly about letting go. Mostly about letting go. It's a combination of both. So you can let it go into the focus. You let go into the bottom of the bowl where the marbles can settle. There's a letting go to allow something to happen, to settle. There's a letting go that supports us to become whole, or everything included. So letting go that helps the settling, letting go that allows the coming home. So samadhi is a factor of awakening, it's a state of being. And what's nice about states of being is that they tend to persist for a while. When a state of being is strong, mental state strong, it's not necessarily going to evaporate so quickly. And so it's there kind of to support you and to carry you further in your life and different situations. And so, when we have recurring these wonderful states of being, when they reoccur often enough, they start kind of... It's not, something permanent, but they start shaping our disposition. They start continuing, even kind of in the background, because they're kind of like become a strength. They become kind of like a flavor that's coming along with us. And it's a fantastic thing to have these seven factors of awakening to some degree accompanying you, even when you're not even thinking about them, that there is the mindfulness is becoming a little bit more second nature. Investigation is just there, ready to see more clearly and curious and interested. That this choice element of this right effort is right there. It's so easy at some point, just that second nature, like you take your hand off a hot stove, it's second nature to avoid the unwholesome and do the wholesome. And it's kind of like a state of being. This is how you live your life. So in this ancient teachings the Buddha has on the seven factors of awakening, he talks about them in two general ways. One way is just straight out, talks about them and just lists them, the seven factors of awakening. Another way is he lists them, but he adds a phrase. So for samadhi, it's the same for the added phrase is the same for each one, but since the topic today is samadhi, the samadhi factor of awakening based on X, Y, and Z. So it's not just simply the factor of awakening, but it's the factor of awakening that's based on something. It has a foundation for something. It's supported by something. And what is it supported by? And here's we have this challenge again with the words. The English translations for these X, Y, and Z, I think very few of you would be inspired if you heard these words for the first time. You might even be dismayed. So I won't tell you that at first what the common English translation, but I'll tell you English words that are close enough to a good translation in the idiom of English in the United States. In that kind of, you know, in some of the strong cultural currents of the United States. So it's a samadhi factor of awakening based on independence, freedom. And the next word is maybe not quite so much like apple pie or something. Dissolving. So based on independence, freedom, and dissolving. Maturing in release. So, you know, and so this independence and freedom and dissolving are all characteristics of freedom. Freedom is, of course, obviously, so it's the case. And so these are qualities, these are all characteristics of freedom, inner freedom, that when we've had enough letting go, enough freedom, enough not clinging to things, that we can have a sense or feel for what freedom is. And when we have a feel for freedom, or we can recognize freedom even to small degrees, then the seven factors of awakening are based on them. They're supporting them, or they're expressions of them. The seven factors of awakening become a manifestation of our freedom, an enactment of them. And this is when I think this Buddhist practice gets particularly rich. When it's no longer a practice to get to freedom, but a practice that's supported by freedom. And I believe that all of you, if it could be pointed out well enough, have had enough experience of freedom to have a reference point for what I'm talking about. So I don't think, this doesn't require big, you know, high levels of spiritual attainment in order, I think, you know, even, you know, ordinary people who have never meditated before have had some access here and there to freedom, and maybe they, as I said this morning, maybe they haven't never taken the time to notice it. It's never been pointed out to them. Or they have so many important things to think about all the time that they don't take the time to notice all the freedom they have in all kinds of small and big ways. And even people who don't have so much freedom, there's plenty of people whose freedom in this world and in our society have been curtailed and limited in dramatic ways. I think still there's probably some possibility to point out that they too have had experiences of freedom. And so to start being a student of freedom. And part of freedom is independence in this way. That when the mind, so let's use the example of the investigation factor. So it's kind of repeating what I said before. Say that you got a parking ticket, and you're so upset at getting the parking ticket. You're upset with yourself because you didn't see that there was a street cleaning day when you parked. And you're upset with the traffic person who gave you a ticket because they should have known that you're having a hard day. And how could they? And so we have all this preoccupation around the traffic ticket, and we're upset and angry and disturbed, and it's such an important thing to be thinking about. They can go on for a few hours. And so what's happened then is our attention has been hijacked by those thoughts and those concerns. And our awareness is being sucked into this black hole of this preoccupation. And it's kind of lost in there. It's like being used. Now attention is being used to serve preoccupation. If instead we decide, let me take a good look at this funk I'm in. Let's look at how upset I am. Let me take, what's happening here? And as soon as you ask yourself, what's happening here? Let's look at it. You're becoming a little bit independent from your upset. You are exercising a little bit degree of freedom, the freedom to step out of the preoccupation and to choose to take a good look at it. And so a little part of you now is independent from the upset. You're still upset, but your attention is starting to be independent of it. If you then strengthen your mindfulness, the mindfulness itself, the awareness itself of it, can begin feeling like, you know, the awareness is not quite the same thing as my upset. My awareness, I'm clearly aware of it, but my awareness is independent, as an independence from the upset. It's not being pushed around by it, it's not being disturbed by it. And then, you know, so then I exercise my choice. I think what would be good is to really feel the upset in my body, the somatics of my upset. It's such a useful place to get my grounding, get my bearing, find some more independence from it. And in fact, you feel it physically, and you notice that as you do that, you're a little bit more free of it, you're a little more open, or it doesn't go away, but you're more independent from it. And so there's a quality of independence that's there, it's built into a sincere moment of mindfulness, a sincere moment of investigation, of effort, of all these things. So to recognize that and have the mindfulness, the investigation supported by the independence is so useful, because then the mindfulness is not being supported so much by our reactivity, by our judgments and our criticisms and our upsets, you know, upset because we're upset, the second arrows. And then the freedom part, the X, Y, and Z, the samadhi factor of awakening based on independence, freedom, and dissolution, dissolving. The freedom part is to really not just feel independent from something, but feel that now feeling there's also an absence. Yes, I'm still upset about my traffic ticket and all that, but I'm so different than I used to be, because I used to be, I was so concerned about being seen as a good equanimous Buddhist, that I would hide my upset among my Buddhist friends and try to pretend that I was really had it all together. But now I'm free of that conceit. I don't mind if they see me upset, because that's who, what's actually true. There's freedom from something that we had before that limited us. I don't know if that was the best example, but we really feel like not only are we independent from what we're looking at, but we're meeting it free from some of the old patterns and reactivity and attachments and desires that we used to have. So again, we're not adding second arrows, or in Buddhist, traditional Buddhist language, not just arrows, but second and third chains that chain us down, tie us down. So to have samadhi supported by freedom and then dissolution. And this is the idea that we don't have to be so involved in getting rid of things as much as to allow it and see it that things are constantly dissolving. Whatever event that's happening for each of us right now, part of this current moment event is dissolving. The sentence I'm speaking now soon enough will dissolve. Did you see it go? The thoughts that you're having now listening to all this soon enough will dissolve, especially if you look at them carefully. And this kind of feeling that things are impermanent and changing and dissolving and evolving and not so solid and fixed, and appreciating the dissolving, the freedom that comes there, that we're not latched on, the dissolving of attachment. And I love the word dissolving as opposed to abandoning or letting go or stopping or ending. Just like that seems so abrupt, and dissolving seems much more kind and supportive, or kind, and it's allowing things to go their own way. If things want to dissolve, well, let them dissolve. Looking at some of your tiles, I see that you're in solid, looks like fairly secure, solid rooms, buildings. I don't see them dissolving exactly. But my words are dissolving, my thoughts are dissolving, probably yours are constantly, everything's kind of constantly dissolving. And some of you are smiling, and that'll dissolve at some point. Some of you are annoyed with me, probably, and that'll dissolve. And, you know, everything is just all. So rather than getting fixated on what your response is, your thoughts, your reactions, your feelings, this, to be free, this freedom part doesn't latch on. It appreciates how everything is dissolving, especially our psychology, you know, it's dissolving. So the seven factors of awakening based on independence, freedom, and dissolving. Now I'll give you some of the common English translations for these terms. Now that you've been prepared. So it's the samadhi factor of awakening based on seclusion, dispassion, and cessation. I don't think the uninitiated person who'd never heard of this before would find seclusion, dispassion, and cessation. What's that? Any of these words are particularly inspiring. And so, you know, it kind of gets kind of flat. What we miss then is the richness of these terms. And in fact, in India, these words, viveka, is one of these rich words that many of the religions in India really hold this up in high value. It's almost synonymous with, that also is almost synonymous with full realization, viveka. And to translate it as seclusion, you don't get that sense. Vivekananda was a famous yogi who came to the United States in the 1800s. The joy of viveka, as his name means. And viraga, You know, it's also a very important word in India, and a rich word in associations. And then Nirodha, cessation. Nirodha. The word for dissolving, for cessation, coming to an end. So all these are qualities of freedom. And the freedom from, so you know there's a quality, some freedom present for us when there's a sense of independence from what's being known. So independence from what's known, where knowing is independent from what is known. It's not entangled or caught or reactive. When there's some freedom from some of the attachments and clingings that maybe we've often had, and there's some kind of openness to dissolution, to space, to things not being so solid, to a softness, a soft container for it all, an openness. And maybe you have some of you have your own associations and landmarks for what freedom is for you. But what happens if you practice samadhi, practice concentration, based on independence, freedom, and dissolution? Then I think we don't approach this with a lot of greed, greedy for concentration. We don't approach it with a lot of conceit. I have to get concentrated or else I'm not going to be a good Buddhist. We don't approach it with a lot of resistance or trepidation or doubt or expectation. But there's much more of an open hand, open mind, open heartedness, a sincerity. Here I am. That freedom is more important than concentration. And I know I don't have a big experience of freedom, but I have just enough sense of what it's like so that, yes, I'm going to try to really stay balanced and focused on my breathing, really unified and collected on my breath. But I'm going to do it so that freedom, feeling of freedom, stays close by. I don't sacrifice it. Even if the amount of freedom I have is 0.01% of what's possible. It doesn't have to be dramatic, but yes, I'm not going to sacrifice that. I'm not going to give that up for this in the effort to develop concentration. In fact, having that little bit of sense of freedom creates that space for the forest pond to settle, the mud to settle, to something to, we're getting out of the way, letting go, making space, so there can be a settling, a gathering, a pull, kind of like the gravitational pull of everything is to the bottom of the bowl. The gravitational pull of all the different fragmented parts of ourselves are actually to come and settle together at the center, in a sense, of who we are. That's the direction of all things. It takes a lot of work to keep ourselves fragmented. It takes a lot of energy, actually, to spin out in thought. It takes a lot of energy to be lost in fantasy, even wonderfully pleasant fantasies. As we begin appreciating how much work it is, that unnecessary energy, then it makes space and allow that energy to settle, to dissolve, to come home, be here. And it's a phenomenal gift we give ourselves, samadhi, because it's a gift of getting to be yourself. Imagine that you get to be yourself with all your foibles. I bet a few of you have a few foibles. Just with all your foibles, you get to have them. It's not, you don't have to make a big deal out of them. You don't have to make a big story about them, and you don't have to hide them and defend yourself or apologize for them or justify them. Or probably some of your foibles are not that important in the big picture of things. And to think that you have to, you know, one of the dangers of this over-psychologized culture in the modern world, maybe especially in the San Francisco Bay Area, is this hypersensitivity to all the little nuances of psychology, and that everything has to be, you know, and all the little mistakes and problems and this and that. But what if the gift of allowing yourself to be whole with all of it, and then becoming whole, lo and behold, finding you're actually freer, more independent of these things, freer of them than when you were in the middle of the trenches trying to work it all out and solve it, everything. There's a time and place where just becoming whole, there's a time and place to really deal with our psychology, for sure, but we can overdo it. And there's a time and place to become whole. Just sit here. This too I'll include. Everything is included. Everything has a place. To expand the awareness. So the awareness is the container that's bigger. It's the room that's big enough to hold everything. Hold all the parts. And then with that kind of mind, that kind of inclusivity, to center ourselves on the breathing. Not pushing anything away, but center ourselves in the breathing, or something comparable to the breathing. Some place of at the center of all the concentric circles of our life. That we make, oh, this is the center, this is the home base. And here, samadhi then, this gathering together and centering itself here in the present moment, here and now, where you get to be, you receive the gift of being whole, the gift of being centered, the gift of being really focused, where the mind doesn't waver, it doesn't get distracted, because it's come home, it's centered. It's strong, it's independent, it's free, and it's really staying with the breath, staying here, in-breath and out-breath, just not because the breath is the most interesting thing in the world necessarily, but it's so fantastic to have everything harmonized with the breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. As it almost as if that's all there's left in the universe is just breathing. Everything else can fade away. Because it wants to. And you sitting at the center of it all, simple, with a simplicity of being, a freedom of being, an independence of being. A beingness, where there's a flavor, a taste of freedom. So the seven factors of awakening as enactments of freedom. Choose freedom until choosing freedom is too much work. And then let go of that too. So thank you all for our time together and for my opportunity to explore this topic. And may it support you in opening up and appreciating the richness of who you are. All the wonderfulness and the few little foibles that are here and there. So it all has a place in samadhi. Thank you.